Hi guys, it's your host Matilda.
And your host Adiza.
And you're listening to the Afrocalypso podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Afrocalypso podcast. Today we have a very special one for you guys. We are joined by Elena Nwosa.
Hi. What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up?
Come on. How are you doing, Elena?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. Just chilling. It's a Saturday morning for us, but I guess it's afternoon for you.
Yeah, afternoon for me. Yeah.
Nice. And how was your week?
My week, it's been an interesting week. Like a couple of days ago, I was at this like Barbie movie event. And when I tell you I was living my best life, as in my inner child was, inner child. Like it was full circle for me because like obviously as a kid, you're like, oh, Barbie this, Barbie that. And to actually be like, you know, invited to something like that is just full circle. So that was like an amazing thing to be able to go to. So it's cute, a little cute moment.
That's nice. I feel like Barbie's marketing, bro.
It's on point.
Bro.
On point.
Top notch. I haven't even watched a movie and I'm like, I don't even know why I'm seeing so much Barbie content.
Yesterday I went downtown and everyone was wearing pink.
Interesting.
And then I went to get my nails done and the girl next to me was like, yeah, this is for like the Barbie movie. I want it pink and bedazzled. And I'm like, it's everywhere. Before it was just social media. But when I actually went downtown and like saw a lot of people, I was like, oh, this thing is not just online. Like the craze is crazy. But I watched Oppenheimer.
How was it?
It was really good.
It was really good. Okay.
You guys should go watch it. Definitely. Like if that's your kind of movie, like it made me really want to go back and like read a little bit on history and like what was going on then and et cetera. But I don't even know how those two movies got like meshed together. Like
no, literally.
Yeah. Nothing to do with each other.
Literally.
I used to think it was one movie, though. I used to think Barbenheimer was a thing.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it was a movie.
Please. No, the marketing's crazy, for real.
Yeah. Crazy. But that's nice. I'm happy you had that moment. But yeah, the reason that we have Elena on today is because we kind of want to talk about albinism. And I was telling Elena when she joined that I found her on TikTok and I mentioned it on an episode that we had before that the reason I love TikTok is that you just get to hear about so many different people's experiences that you really would not have, not specifically with albinism because it's so widespread in Nigeria and Africa that at least you've had a schoolmate or a churchmate or someone in your vicinity with it. But there's so many different things that I didn't know people were experiencing that I see on TikTok and it's like, I want to know more about that. So that's how I came across Elena's TikTok. And Elena talks a lot about albinism. And I was like, this is a thing that would be amazing to talk about.
Yeah.
And then now we have her on. Yay. So Elena, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Okay, so I'm from the UK, more specifically Hertfordshire, which is outside London. Currently, I'm a law student at university. So she's reading her books, you know, she's focused. Come on. I'll be graduating this time next year, which is scary to me. So, you know, final year uni things, very scary.
Do you guys still have to go to law school after that?
So like our law school is like uni. So currently I am in law school, but then after that to like start practicing and stuff, you got to do all these other exams and all that kind of stuff. But our law school is university. Yeah.
You don't have to do undergrad and then...
No. So we just do undergrad law and then that is just everything. So yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And one thing you did mention, but it's kind of evidence because you're really into law, is that you are of Nigerian origin.
Come on.
You said she will go to school, she'll be a lawyer, she will not be an embarrassment.
Period.
I love that phrase.
Period.
Yeah. Another thing you didn't mention is that you're a model as well.
I am a model. I've been doing it for like a year and a bit now, and that has been going off. And I think it's been something that I've really enjoyed and something that I just didn't expect to happen. I think it just happened out of nowhere. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, do I want to do this? Do I not want to do it? And like literally yesterday, I was talking to my mom about it, and she was like, nobody pushed you to do it. You decided on your own accord that, okay, you know, how can I do this? What can I do with it? And it just has taken off from there. So, yeah.
What made you get into it? How did you get into that space?
So my agency reached out to me on Instagram and they were like, you have to sign with us. And I was like, me? A whole me? Really? They got me to sign the contract and everything like that. And that's just kind of how everything started. It wasn't this whole like big, massive story. It literally was just them. Again, it's this whole power of social media, how you're able to see so many different people like coming off of what Matilda said, you know. So I think that's kind of how it all started for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so like kind of pivoting into albinism and stuff. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that I did notice your page especially was because you are someone that grew up with or was born with albinism.
Yeah.
First of all, teach us the language. Okay, like that sounds somehow.
I get it. It's fine. It's completely fine. No, you're good.
Yeah, because I was reading somewhere today as we were researching for this, and some people apparently they don't like being called albinos. Mm-hmm. They prefer being called people with albinism. And I was like, I sat down for a second. I was like, I've never really thought of that. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine someone calling you the blacks.
Exactly like that. Do you know what I mean? So I'll tell you like this whole story that happened to me. So I was at this party and this guy says in the party, like, oh, hey. This guy was like, oh, there's like a pretty albino in this party. So then my friends came and told me, and I was like, that's like some kind of way, like you could just say there's like a pretty person at the party and just leave it at that.
Yeah. But
it just, you know, it can just rub people the wrong way. So me personally, I would say I'm a person with albinism as opposed to just being albino. But I mean, to each their own. Some people don't care, or some people just would like to kind of say that, you know, I am a person as well as being born with albinism. So
I think it's really great to share that, because I feel like there are a lot of people, just even thinking growing up in Nigeria, it's similar to the way people say like, this is offensive, but like half caste. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I feel like people just people just kind of say stuff,
say things.
And even though it's like offensive, people are like, okay, whatever. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, so I think hopefully more people can use the correct term so that they're not offending a group of people.
Definitely.
And then I wanted to understand, like, when you are born with albinism, how is it explained to you? Because I know it was never explained to me, and I think it should be explained to people still like from young that this is what it is, because it's a visual difference, like something 100%. That is visible. But like to you yourself, did you notice it first, or did your parents tell you first?
I think when I was young, I was just aware of the fact that I looked different. And I think one thing that my parents did was they always empowered me. They never said, oh, you know, you need to behave this way or that way. They just kind of supported me and just told me, okay, cool, you look different, but that doesn't set you aside from anybody else. You can do whatever you want. And again, like I was talking to my mom, and she, when she had me, she was very concerned and worried that, oh, okay, will my child be able to read? Will my child be able to do this? Because albinism affects your eyes. And she was saying how now that, you know, she's not worried about me because I've just done so many different things, and I've not really let albinism like set me back. I've just kind of been like, okay, it's something that I have. How can I overcome it? And again, we'll probably get into this later. It's just been a whole journey of like healing with it and like getting over it. And it's just, you know.
So did your mom ever actually like sit you down and have that conversation with you? Or was it just a thing that was just, you know?
I think my parents must have been like, you know, you have albinism. This is what it is. Don't let it put you back. You know, it's just something that you're just going to have to work through. So I think that was kind of their mentality around it. And I think in my case, it worked quite well because I didn't, you know, obviously you have your moments, but I think that mentality is something that I've kept quite dear to me. So, yeah.
I guess for context for listeners, where did you grow up? Where were you born? Like, I think that plays a huge role too
100%,
in your life experiences.
100%. So I was born in the UK. And I think one of the things that I've realized is that my experience is so drastically different from other individuals with albinism who are born in like the US or Canada or Africa, etc. So I think I got very, very, very lucky in terms of like having such a supportive like community around me and my friends and my family and people that I work with, you know, just being so understanding. But that just isn't the case for a lot of people with albinism. And it is so sad to say. I am just incredibly grateful that the people around me have just like taken me for who I am, as opposed to, you know, looking at this albinism thing and being like, oh, I don't understand it. I don't want to be near her. Do you know what I mean?
Bro, that sucks.
Yeah.
I know. It's an interesting one. It's quite sad, but you know, you got to educate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. And I think we've talked about albinism and we've kind of gone around it, but we haven't actually like defined it and what it looks like. And even I reading about this was like, I'd never actually taken the time to really look into like what exactly it is. So from what I found, albinism is an inherited genetic condition that reduces the amount of melanin pigment found in the skin, the hair, and the eyes.
Yeah.
So that part was like really important because like we're able to visibly see like the skin and the hair stuff. But the eyes one, that was a thing I had heard here and there, but I didn't really know that it affected eyes. And apparently a lot of people with albinism have some kind of visual impairment or the other, which you kind of mentioned, but it really is not a thing that ever occurred to me. And apparently most people with albinism get it from like both parents have to have the gene, even though like they're dormant. So like both of them might not be like have albinism. I was about to do it.
You're good. Like it's, you know.
They may not visually have it, but like they carry the gene.
Yeah.
So you could both be black or whatever.
Yeah.
And then have a child with albinism. That part was also very interesting to me because I've always not understood where it comes from. Like, and apparently there's also different types of albinism.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you talk about that a bit more? Because I feel like
spectrum-wise.
Yeah, the spectrum. What's the spectrum?
So there are people with albinism who have completely like white hair, you know, white hair, very, very, very fair, and then have the visual impairment as well. And then there are people like myself. I have gray eyes, like gray, bluey eyes, and my hair is like blondy, gingery type vibe. And I have obviously fair skin. And I'm also visually impaired. But some people might just only have it impacting them in the eyes. So they might be, you know, a little bit darker in complexion. And you probably won't be able to tell that they have albinism. But, you know, obviously, if you speak to them and understand them, they'll probably explain it. And you'll be like, oh, wow, like I didn't know that albinism could look like that. And it's, again, it's coming off of what you said. Albinism can just look so different. And it's just having those conversations with people to kind of understand what it can and can't look like. So.
And does albinism, I guess it affects every race, right? It's not just like,
every race,
Yeah. What I found also interesting in looking into it was that they say that while it does affect every race, it's most common in sub-Saharan Africa. And I was trying to like find exactly why that would be the case. And I'm seeing like mixed understanding of what that is. First of all, some people say that it might actually not be the case. It's just that in Africa, because most people are dark skinned, it's more apparent when you are not. So it's more visible there. So then it's more reported as opposed to like everywhere else where you might have albinism and just kind of blend in because like they already have less melanin, you know? So there's that. There's also the opinion that it comes from the fact that African people are more like have a more isolated genetic pool. So as we mentioned, most types of albinism comes from like the gene has to be present in both the father and the mother.
Yeah.
So if the genetic pool is more isolated, the chances of having a kid with albinism are higher. So that's another understanding of it. But I don't think that they've actually come to a huge consensus. But I think the generally understood thing is that the most occurrence of albinism is in sub-Saharan Africa. Mm-hmm. And fun fact, Tanzania currently has the largest rate of people with albinism worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah. I found that really interesting. In Nigeria, there definitely are a lot of people with albinism. Like, I grew up seeing it all around, but like, still, I don't see it in media. I don't see it talked about. Mm. The discussions are just not really
there. And just, I guess, representation in general. Like, just this person is a person with albinism. Like, you just see the person on TV with albinism. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, there's just not that much representation in Nigeria.
In Nigeria, the only person with albinism that I've seen is, there's this like Yoruba actor guy. That's like the only person I've seen on TV.
Oh, the comedian. But is that was even in recent times. No, that the one that speaks Yoruba. Like, he speaks Yoruba like
throughout. This guy's an older speaks Yoruba, but this guy's an older
this
Yoruba
is a younger actor. Younger Yoruba
okay
like comedian guy.
Okay, we have two now.
Two. But even that guy, he's actually like, it's actually more in recent times. Like, I think growing up I had never seen anyone on TV with albinism. Like, that was just never I don't remember anyways. It's not something that, and as kids, to be honest, kids are actually not very like, I feel like kids can see something and they're like, okay, but it doesn't really stand out to them and they're like, okay, and then they kind of move, because kids don't have
those pre-notion
biases, right? Exactly. It's something that you learn as you grow, and then you now take note of a person's difference, but really kids are like, oh, this person looks like this, but then it just doesn't really even stick. You're just like, okay, that's, they're just this person. Do you get what I'm saying?
Which kind of brings me to the question of how it was like growing up, especially with what feels like lack of representation. But you tell us what you thought about media and like seeing people that looked like you.
I think when I was younger, for me, there was nobody in like close proximity when it comes to social media. Because I think now everybody's like connected. And again, coming back to this TikTok point, you see everybody and it's just, you know, you can interact with each other very quickly. But back when I was like, I say it like it was like years ago. I was born in like 2003. I'm not that old, but.
Oh no!
And Gen Z category.
We have a Gen Z amongst us. When I hear 2000 and I'm like,
oh! That's literally my younger sister's birth year. Like, I'm like, bruh, I'm old. Okay. Y'all are supposed to be like 11 or something. Like,
wild.
But yeah, no, I think back when I was like younger, I think I only saw like two people who were like models who had albinism, and my mom would like show them to me and be like, look, like, aww, this is what they look like and everything like that, and just, you know, she would try and, you know, get my confidence up. And this is going to be like a really surprising thing, but like as a child I was very extroverted. I would speak to anyone. I would just be very like bubbly, happy and all that kind of stuff. But now I think everybody, especially people who are friends with me from uni, I'm very reserved and like I'm just the type of person to be like, okay, let me suss out the vibe, let me see what's what. But like back when I was a child, I would talk and talk and talk and talk, as in like it was too much. It was too much. Like, it's crazy. But no, back to what you were saying, I think representation with albinism when I was a lot younger was minimal. Like, it just was not there. But I think now, especially with modeling and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, the modeling industry becoming a lot more inclusive, you are seeing more people with albinism, which is great. And I think another thing as well that I would say is that if I didn't have albinism, I wouldn't be on social media, because I don't like it that much. But in order to kind of, I'm being so serious as well, which is going to cover like a shock. But I think for me, my whole thing of why I do what I do and like why I do the whole law thing, why I do the modeling thing, is that so younger people with albinism can be like, oh, she does this, let me do that and put 10 on top of that. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's my whole mentality. So I've always said, if I didn't have albinism, please wouldn't see me anywhere, sorry to say. Sorry to say.
I have a question, actually. You had mentioned that you were more outgoing as a child, and then that kind of, you're now more kind of reserved or introverted. Was that influenced by your experience as a person with albinism, or like, was it more so like you just got older? Like, did that impact or change your personality in some way?
I think it's a mixture of both me getting older and like the experiences that I've had. Like, I think for me, I would say more negative experiences started happening to me when I got into secondary school. And then from then onwards, it kind of became my personality to kind of be a bit more reserved. And I think that then has its own impact of being like a Black woman. And like, if you're reserved, then you're standoffish, you're not approachable, all these kind of rubbish things that people will say. And it's just because there is this whole thing where it's like, okay, I have albinism, but then on top of that, I'm a Black woman. So there's all these different kind of words that are being described for me that I just think is so unnecessary, like so unnecessary.
Do you care to speak about what it was in secondary school, like your experiences in secondary school?
There are so many. but I would say one that like sticks out to me is the one that I said at the beginning, was like this guy, just for some reason, for no reason at all, you didn't have to say there's like a person with albinism here who's pretty, like not the person with albinism, an albino who is pretty. Like that just, for me, that word just seems so charged. It's like you didn't have to say it like that. And it was like a situation where like he announced it and I wasn't in the room. Exactly. So it wasn't so, like he was saying it to me.
I thought he said it to someone even. Like, no, just he like kind of pull someone up.
No, as in like breaking news. Like, do you know what I mean? He announced it. Yeah. Yeah. So
it's like experiences like that, but like at school. With secondary school, I feel like people become mean and there's like more bullies and stuff like that. But then dealing with that extra layer of something that they have to actually like point out, that must have been annoying.
It's something that I've had to really, really like, I have to monitor. Like, I can't control how somebody acts. I can only control my own reaction. So it's something that I've had to learn how to react to. So if somebody did have something negative to say, like, it's one thing where, like, if you ask something stupid, I'm going to say something stupid back. Do you know what I mean? I will match the energy. And I've always said this. So if anybody says anything that's one kind, I will say something one kind back. Do you know what I mean?
Was there ever support for you at that point when you were transitioning into secondary school and, like, there are more people pointing it out and being more mean about that? What was there stuff available to you, like counseling, and were there support groups for things like this? And did you have access to that at that point in time?
So in secondary school, we had like a team that would like deal with issues where it would be like bullying, etc., and all that kind of stuff. So that was like accessible for me. But I don't know, I'm the type of person where I just like to deal with my issues and move on. Do you know what I mean? So I'd rather just deal with it myself because I'm more than capable of doing so. And I think, again, with like my parents raising me the way that they did, I've got the skills to do that.
I was just going to say, it's the Nigerian blood in you.
Hello.
Oh my gosh.
Don't like being like babied. It's like, if they give it to you, give it back to them and
for
stuff
real.
Like that.
Yeah. For real.
Yeah. But it does still suck that even though you do have a strong personality, it still affected you, right? So
100%.
It's like, no matter how strong you are, things like that would still get to you and it would 100%. Still have an impact on your life. Yeah. But I wonder if you think it would have actually been helpful to have those kind of like support systems, because as you said, like in your vicinity, in your small social circle, there weren't really people with albinism, right?
No, not personally.
So I wonder if there were things like support groups and stuff that you could meet other people like that and kind of share experiences and feel more like less isolated. I wonder if that would help.
It definitely would have helped, because I know like at the moment right now, there's like a whole group chat of us on like Instagram of people with albinism that I've met through modeling and stuff like that. And a really good friend of mine, Jordan, he has albinism as well, and we're like mutuals on Instagram and all that kind of stuff, and we finally met each other at this like modeling gig, and it was like, oh my gosh, like finally, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's really nice to have the this kind of like community of individuals with albinism. Exactly. And I think I'm very, very big on community as well. I think, you know, I'm just wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing without the support that I have and people just like standing behind me and being like, you can do it, and just supporting me. So yeah.
Right. Also, I think maybe even in that case with that guy, even someone just saying, hey, that's not a nice thing to say. I do feel like, honestly, even this podcast has been enlightening for me, like speaking to you. For example, even the term persons with albinism, and the way he also went about it, I feel like the more people are aware, okay, this is not okay, and this is actually affecting people, like I feel like people would be able to stand up more when they see things like that happen. Like, I don't know, that's just my thought, like just listening to this conversation and just processing everything. But
I think like when it did happen, one of my friends, she did like go up and like have a go at him, and like they had their own little argument,
like, but argument,
I just
yeah
I wasn't in the room at the time, so right. I just like, you know, I did stand up for myself. I was like, yeah, like you can't say things like
that. Say
and
that. Then, okay,
please, the thing is, it got worse.
Oh, okay, interesting.
It got worse. So again, I was just standing there, and like my guy like pulled me closer to him with my braid. Hello, like
hey?
Like no, I'm being so serious. That's very scary. Mm-hmm. Very scary. And I just didn't know how to react, because that had never happened to me before.
To you? Wow.
Ever.
That
ever.
is that guy has problems.
It's crazy. Wow.
I think that kind of reminds me of what I was reading on the perceptions of albinism in Africa. And I would like, I grew up in Nigeria, like a part of my life in Nigeria. And it's so funny, like I was oblivious of the perceptions of how people with albinism are seen. Mm-hmm. Apparently there's myths around it. Like some people think that their bones contain minerals and gold that could make you rich. So like they're highly targeted for rituals and stuff like
in Nigeria,
that.
West Africa in general. Mm-hmm.
Sub-Saharan Africa, everywhere. Tanzania, South Africa,
Literally everywhere. So it's one of the situations where like, it wouldn't be safe for me to go to like all of these countries. I know that obviously in Nigeria, I'll be fine, because obviously I've got my family there and they know what's what. And like my friends, you know, who grew up in Nigeria would know where to take me and where not to take me, etc. But having that kind of freedom to travel to countries like that, I don't have, purely for my own safety. And that is something that is, it's interesting to look at. And I think there's understanding that it's part of their culture, but then the fact that it is impacting innocent people is just ridiculous. And I think me being able to speak up on that and speak up on this issue, because some people are completely unaware that this happens, and it's just really, really sad, because it's just happening to innocent people, and it's crazy to even comprehend and trying to digest it and understand the reasonings why, and they're just, it's not adding up. It's really not adding up.
I think it's just a part of the lack of education that happens, because like when people don't understand things, they tend to like mystify it and add spiritual meanings to it and stuff, especially in Africa. Like if you understand it a bit more and demystify, I just really do think that like things like that wouldn't happen. Furthermore, even from like the trafficking of people with albinism's body parts, there's also myths around if you have HIV or something and you have sex with someone with albinism, you'll be cured.
That is crazy. I didn't.
So like in addition to not being safe physically in terms of like you being killed and trafficked and etc., you're now also scared of being
social
sexually
interactions. Like
and violence. And then some people also believe that women that give birth to children with albinism, there's like an evil spirit in them or something like that, and like it has come to like haunt them and etc. And it's just like, I think if people first of all were more educated, because first of all, you have to be a bit educated to even understand what genetics are, I would say, to start from. And then once you understand genetics, it's just like, the hell? Like, you can't have that kind of opinion. Exactly. So it's just the lack of education. But I think what you said was a thing also that I have never thought about. The fact that traveling to certain parts of the world are risks to you. Like, moving freely in this world is affected.
Yeah, there's, so again, this is like just another story to say, when my mom and I have like gone away together or whatever, when we've gone through like passport control, they always like question, oh, like, is that like, am I her daughter, etc.
And it's child.
Exactly, and I get it, like, you know, they're trying to stop, you know, trafficking, fine, but it's coming to a point where it's like critical thinking. I look like my mother. Like, I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but I literally look like my mother, and I know these measures are put in place to make people more safe and to really point out the issue of trafficking, but it comes to a point where I would have to like travel with like my birth certificate and all these different kinds of crazy, right?
That's insane.
So I'm now getting to this age where I'm like traveling with my friends and all this kind of stuff, and obviously nothing bad has happened, but it's always in the back of my mind that I have to be incredibly careful.
Is like, is someone going to stop you? You don't know the person's intentions, any random person that talks to you. That is
exactly
crazy.
And I think on top of that, there is this whole like fetishization of albinism,
you
as
know,
well.
I was just about to ask that, because usually on these, in these kind of situations, there's always the flip side of things. So please, yes.
Okay. So it's something for me personally where I have to really look at somebody's character and be even more cautious when I'm like going on dates or all this kind of stuff, where you have to really address the person and say, okay, cool, do you want to experience me as a person, or do you want to experience someone like me? Do you know what I mean? And it's a tough one to distinguish. And, you know, there are people out there, and I've had my own experiences, and I think it's upsetting that I kind of have to date on defense, but it's just, I have to protect myself and I have to keep myself safe. So, you know.
Yeah.
I find there so many parallels, like obviously not at the same degree, but so many parallels with albinism and being visibly different and being Black. Like, you know, the lack of freedom of movement, the possibility of being like fetishized and just stuff like that. So I just feel like I understand, but just never thought about it. And it's just interesting just thinking about how white people being explained Black issues to must feel like, not like the bigoted white people, but white people that thought they knew, and then they hear about Black issues and it's like just setting in on them. That's kind of how I feel right now, because I just I was like, how come I've just never thought about this? And there's just so much to it.
Actually, that even brings me to a thought. So I feel like even with a person with albinism, it probably hits different because it's your own people who are like supposed to be your own people. So how do you navigate like race, I guess? Like, I'm just so curious. How do you navigate race? And
again, it all kind of stems from the way that I was brought up and the way that my parents kind of explained everything to me. They've always said, okay, you are a Black woman, you're a Black girl, you know, that is who you are. You just have something, this condition, which makes you look one kind of way. And what I also want to say is, depending on how I have my hair and code switching, I would say to an extent I do access a level of like
privilege? Being able,
exactly
really?
That
per, like,
exactly that. No, I would 100% say that. And I think another thing on top of that is my mum gave me like a more Western name to kind of combat that as well. Obviously, like my last name, you know, I can't do anything about that. But my mum made a conscious decision to say, okay, how can I further her chances to make sure that she can step into rooms that she might not be accepted into? And I think my mom and my dad really, really like took their time to say,
I
okay,
thought about it.
100%. 100%.
Oh, I really do want to go more into that. That's so interesting. Wait, so some people, like if you like straighten your hair and et cetera, in some spaces, some people aren't able to identify your race.
Like they think that I'm mixed, or like what I've been getting a lot is that I look like Ice Spice, and it's like, no.
Ice Spice.
That's something that I've been getting quite frequently. But I think it's depending on like my hair. So if I'm wearing like wigs, or if I've just got my hair out and it's straightened. And again, mm-hmm. I think code switching plays a massive part in like who I am, because again, to access different rooms and to access different opportunities, you have to code switch. Mm-hmm. So I think all of that put into one, some people cannot tell the difference, which is crazy to me, because I look like a Black woman. I am a Black woman. So, you know.
I think it really brings out the fact of how like Black is really kind of a social construct, because yeah, when I was on TikTok, because you know when you see like one thing and you're interested in it, TikTok is like, oh, I will give you so many videos on it. I saw some girl saying like, a lot of people, she also has albinism, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that some people tell her she's not Black, that she should stop claiming Black and et cetera. And I'm like,
that's crazy. How crazy.
When you actually think about it, it's just like, Black is really, it's not the color of your skin.
It's like cultural. Like,
yeah, yeah, it's
experience,
cultural.
Yeah.
Mm.
Huh. Okay. So what does Black mean to you then?
For me, Black means having... I would say a lot of individuals who are Black have this whole idea of like, we're a community. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We look out for each other. And I definitely think, especially in Nigerian culture, community is key. So mm-hmm. I think that's what it means to me. Just identifying with each other and helping each other and just being one big community and keeping an eye out for each other. Unspoken acknowledgement of the bonds between us, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone ever in that said community ever pushed back on your identity because of your albinism?
I personally haven't experienced anything like that. And I think purely because a lot of the people around me have either been like educated or had an idea, or they literally asked me like to my face, okay, so like you look Black, but you don't have Black skin. What's up with that? So I think I've never personally experienced anything like that. But I would say that that type of experience happens a lot more in the States, in my opinion, from what I've heard from other people with albinism. I think in the UK, people here, it's very like in the subtext, all this kind of stuff. So like racism is in the subtext, where I think within the States, it's like in your face. Do you know what I mean? So that is the kind of, you know, differences between somebody like myself growing up in the UK and somebody like myself growing up in the US, in my opinion.
Maybe it has something to do with the fact that in the UK, a lot of people are immigrants from sub-Saharan Africa. So like they have the context, but like in America, they're like further removed from Africa. So like when you have it, it's like it could be something that you haven't seen before and have less understanding of it. So which really goes back to like, why is there not that much representation in media? I know you've mentioned the thing about modeling and how it's getting better, but I feel like in like Hollywood and movies, Nollywood even, it's still not very much explored. Like I haven't seen like a person with albinism as a lead in a movie, that kind of thing. And it just goes to the need for representation.
In the media, I would say there is a representation, but people with albinism are represented in like an evil, negative way. And that is something that really
Like in Nigeria?
Usually like the villains.
Yeah.
In usually Hollywood, the villains, I would say specifically.
Yeah. Seriously?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I've seen that.
Yes.
Interesting. I have never...
I wonder where that came from.
I think it's this whole idea of like, if you don't understand something, you make fun of it, you make it like...
Demonize
something that's
it
like, exactly that.
But so. I just feel like, I don't know why, but I feel like people in Hollywood are educated. So
this is what I'm saying. I guess it's something, I guess whatever sells, whatever works, whatever narrative they want to push, you know what I mean? Mm. So it's this having the ability to be ignorant in order to sell something. So I guess that's kind of the way to look at it potentially.
Mm. Do you ever feel the burden of like having to represent your community and stuff like that, because you mentioned like you wouldn't be on social media if you weren't born with albinism, and I'm just like, bro, that just feels like pressure. Like okay, so with being Black, and I'm just parallelizing, parallelizing, is that even a word? I'm drawing parallels because I'm trying to speak to my experiences and how it must be exhausting. You know how people right now are always like Black excellence, Black excellence. And it's just like, why are Black people just not able to be mediocre? Because white people are able to be mediocre. And I feel like there must be this added pressure for you to like be more visible so you can be an example for people and stuff like that. So do you ever like stop to think of it? Has that affected you in any way?
I guess it's just part of my personality along like with growing up with albinism that I've always just been like, whatever I do, I have to make sure I'm doing it a million times better than anyone else around me. Like, it's this idea with, okay, cool, being Black and then having this condition on top of it. And it can be, you know, some days it can be difficult to wrap your head around or like work through it. But I think, again, it's something that I think I was born to do. I think I had to be in the public eye in a sense. So I don't think I've ever really thought of it like as a burden or as something that is like having like the weight on my shoulders. But I think if anybody was to do it just based off of who I am and what I'm interested in and my personality, I think it makes sense that it is, you know, something that I have to do. And I've kind of made it my life mission to make sure that whatever I do, whoever I come into contact with, I'm educating, explaining, and just showing them that, you know, because again, I think people don't think albinism looks the way it does. For me, I think they're used to kind of the generic, oh, people with albinism can't be attractive. And it's like, that's wrong. That is so wrong. Because there are so many like beautiful people with albinism. And it's this, again, this whole narrative where albinism is ugly or albinism is evil and all this type of stuff where you're just making fun of something that you just don't want to understand.
Right. Wow. I feel like I learned a lot, actually.
Yeah. I think something we didn't actually go that much into is like, I know for the most part, albinism does not affect your life expectancy. But like in terms of like physical things that you've had to deal with, like I know you would be more prone to like sunburns and stuff like that, right? Physically, what have you had to deal with because of albinism?
Right.
I think I've had to really adapt the way that I live my life. So being visually impaired, for example, so I'd kind of need to, like, I can't see the same way as a normal person would be able to see. So I'd use my phone a lot to like enlarge text if I couldn't see it or whatever. So just like, I wouldn't let it stop me. I would just be like, okay, how can I fix this? How can I make it easier for myself? How can I, you know, adapt? You know, she's innovative, you know, she's out here.
Period.
So I think there's that aspect to it. And I think in the summer when it is a little bit more hot, I just have to wear sun cream. And it's something that my mom does get onto me a lot for because I don't do it, because it's just like, I don't know why I don't do it, but I know that I should do it. It's one of them ones. So
have you ever gotten sunburned though?
So like so many times and so badly. Like there was one time where like it blistered and I was like, oh, Let me get the sun cream real quick. Let me get that real quick. You know,
because I was like, you know, when you tell kids like that they should do something and they don't, and it's like if you don't hear it, you will feel it.
Exactly.
So I was just like wondering if you have felt it, and then it would help.
No, I think I have to be very careful in the summer. And it's also this whole situation where, you know, she wants to be a baddie, but, you know, she needs to be a baddie carefully. She needs to be a baddie carefully. So it's not every day having your skin out and stuff like that. So she needs to dial it back, make sure she is covered and protected. So,
Interesting. But then again, it's not all people with albinism that have, because it's like a spectrum, and like it's very possible that you're born with albinism but don't have any issues with your eyes?
I think majority, and this might not be true, but in my opinion, I think a majority of people do have complications with their eyes. But I think more often it's complication with your eyes as opposed to it just being only your skin. Like with most of the people that I speak to, it's mostly complication with eyes and then majority complication with skin and hair. So
Okay. I low-key did read that. They said like some people might visibly not look like they have albinism, but then they would have eye issues, and then that would kind of be an indicator. I'm taking it all in. Sorry for the silence.
You're good. It is. And I think it's very eye-opening. Even just thinking back, you think back to people who maybe you've spoken to who have albinism, and you're like, wow, so this person was dealing with all of this on top all of having things. To go through life, like, you know. So it's just kind of very eye-opening for sure. And I think I'm really happy that you're sharing your experiences, because people get to learn from you, and hopefully like that changes perception and just like opens up a new perspective for people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, this is what I've always wanted to do, just speak about albinism. And I think I can only speak from it from like a woman with albinism, because I know that there's probably going to be so many different experiences. You know, it's this whole idea of like intersectionality. I can only speak from my perspective, because I know maybe for somebody who might be non-binary or somebody who is a man or whatever, I think different experiences, because I know from my perspective, I don't think it might be as bad for other gender identities, in my personal opinion. I mean, it's, again, everybody's personal experiences will kind of change drastically in terms of having albinism and then like putting that alongside gender identity.
And even honestly, where you're born affects it 100%, drastically, like 100%. As we said before. Yeah, I really do wonder, because it was also my experience growing up in Nigeria to see people. I wonder what the experience of someone that was born and lived in Nigeria, for example, is like. Because it's like we grew up with these people, but yet it's just, we just wasn't told to us, like the experience just wasn't publicized, I would say. And I find it weird, especially because it's so common.
This is the thing, it's like a lot more common than people think. And I think the only reason why we're not seeing it is, again, it's not represented in the media enough, or it's given like a negative connotation, etc. So it's one of those ones where if you do see someone with albinism, I can't lie, if somebody did approach me and ask me about albinism, I'd look at them one kind, like, not even
really.
Not,
I was gonna ask that, you know what?
It's not even side eye or be giving eye side. Do you know what I mean? Like in terms of that.
Like up, down, side to side, all for around.
For real. There's a certain way to do it as well. You can't just come up to somebody and be like, oh, you look different. Why?
Can you talk about it?
Like, no, literally, like, it's, there's a way to do it. Like, I guess there's a kind of etiquette around it potentially. So, but yeah, if somebody like stopped me in my tracks and was like, you look different, why? It's literally just like,
no less than 200 words.
No, literally, like, please, I've got things to do. So,
especially in a world like this where we have Google and like we have all these things that you can just pull up the information on. I think if you are like, if you have the people in your community, it becomes not that big of a deal to have that conversation with them. But I feel like it's not a thing that you want to be pulled up on. Like, exactly. Again, drawing parallels with being black. I don't want someone to just be like, what does black feel like? Like someone I just met.
Literally.
You know?
No, literally.
Those kind of questions, they will get an I don't know from me. I'll be like,
people touching your hair.
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. The hair situation. You get that? It's like, if I had like, so back in like secondary school, primary school, I think in uni, it's either my hair's in braids or my hair is cornrowed and in wigs, because nobody's got time to be doing this natural hair at uni. Like, please, I got books to read. Okay? But I think when I had my natural hair out, people would like touch my hair and be like, oh my gosh, like, wow, like, what is this? And it's like, hello, like, it's hair. What? Like, do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
And also, this brings it up a whole different other point. I get a bit apprehensive with having braids, because I don't want people to think, oh, like, she's a white woman with braids. Like, okay, cool.
Really?
Do you want
to get that?
Like, just tell them to like pissed off. Like, literally, like, what's...
I think it's...
That's crazy.
Okay, do what you want, but it's like, obviously, I need to have my hair in braids because, hello, my hair, like, I need to keep my hair protected. Like, hello. Yeah. But I can't... That is crazy. It's crazy. It's, and I think that type of conversation happens a lot in the US more than it does in the UK.
In the, okay, I see.
Definitely, definitely.
Hmm. Wow.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's there's so many different like ways to look at it and so many different parallels, etc. Like having this conversation has made me aware of so many different things that I just like, it's a situation where I don't think about all these different things all the time. It's like, please, I've got this and this and this to be worrying about. I've not got time to like sit and like really sit,
really
with.
Take it all in.
Exactly. And again, like I was saying before, I'm on this whole journey of self-acceptance as well, because I think when I was a lot younger, I just didn't like the way I looked at all. Like, it was really sad, and I've never really properly addressed it. It was a situation where like I would sit with myself and I would be like, oh, if I'm not attractive by like said age, then like I've done something wrong, which is a heavy thing to like sit with as a child
at that age.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a heavy thing to sit with. And I think I grew into having albinism as opposed to it being like instantly, okay, I'm confident, I'm this, I'm that. Do you know what I mean? It's definitely been a journey. And like, I've kind of understood that being comfortable with yourself isn't going to be linear. You're going to have your up downs, your everything. So it's definitely been a journey and a half for sure.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried therapy for these things as well?
I think it would help, you know. I really think it would help. I definitely think it would help. It's this whole, again, it comes back to this, like, my mentality. I just deal with things by myself and get on with it. Do you know what I mean?
We need to talk a little bit more about this, because I actually think that the Nigerian mentality, because I think you have aspects of that and we all do, is just like, we don't really sit too much to process those kind of emotions because it's not productive, you might think. It's easier and it appears to be more productive to just be like, whatever, we need to move forward, we need to do all these things, but it might show up in ways that you wouldn't expect it to. It's still happening in your subconscious. It's still there, because like you kind of talked about this, but you kind of brushed it aside. Like, you talked about it more of an aside than like a main thing, and I don't mean to like sit and dwell
no
in those
you're
things.
Good, you're good.
Yeah, but I just feel like it might be helpful to, because I'm thinking going forward for like people that possibly would have kids that have albinism, like rather than tell them to just like move forward and whatever, just push it aside and move forward, because it doesn't define you, but like your life experiences affect you and you need to be able to process that to kind of move forward. You get. That's 100%. What I think, anyway.
Matilda is a proponent. What's the word English of therapy? Like, I've seen a therapist, and I think we even had a therapist on the podcast
mm-hmm.
as well. And just they spoke about how, like, I think Black people in general just should go to therapy more and stuff like that. It's definitely something. And I think even for me trying out therapy, sometimes I find it difficult to. Like, it's hard. The tough part is finding someone who can even relate to you to start with as well, and trying to explain yourself. And I've had a therapist like literally mother me. Like, she was like, "Oh, my kids. My kids used to watch Disney Channel. This is such a Disney Channel generation problem."
Please. Oh my days.
So I think that's always the. At least for me anyways, with therapy, it's always it's the barrier of like trying to even find someone who can would even get.
And affordability too, because therapy be expensive. But I think there's multiple resources that you can take advantage of, like, in that it doesn't have to even be traditional therapy. It could be what I meant by like a support group. Like, you guys are actually able to talk about things like that and process it, see how other people dealt with it and just stuff. Like, it doesn't have to be like traditional shrink.
You're
telling them your problems. Because I've also had a therapist tell me, you know, that's just how men are. I was like, wait, what? And she was like, some African auntie. I was trying different therapists and I found her, and like, it's not always going to be good, but when you find the person, I think it's helpful. Or the space, I would say. But that brings me to going forward. What does a world that has understood and accepted people with albinism look for you? Like, what steps do you think society still has to educating people? Because there are, like, efforts to push it forward. But I would say since I was small and, like, right now, I haven't seen that. And now I am getting old. I haven't seen that much difference in the behavior towards people with albinism. So, like, what needs to be done, really?
I think just seeing more people with albinism in traditional media and being represented in that way. And again, I was having a conversation with somebody else with albinism, and we were talking about how, back to the Barbie movie, because Barbie is also one of my nicknames because, hello, she's blonde, her favorite color is pink, like, let's go. Or my mom likes to call me Barbie Lola. So she did her she did her little remix on that. But I think with how the Barbie movie, there are so many different types of women who are, like, casted as Barbie in the movie. It would have been amazing to see, you know, a woman with albinism in that kind of space, because it would have been like, again, it would have been such a full circle moment for my inner child to see something like that. And it would have been like, okay, do you know what I mean? Because there were so many different women, in the Barbie movie, and it just would have been amazing to see my kind of representation in that. And I think I never want it to come across as if we're, like, wanting to dominate the space. No, I just want there to be more of, like, a appreciation or an acceptance for people like myself in these types of spaces.
Right.
I agree. And in terms of, like, education with, like, kids, I want to say, I don't know if it's something that's being done in schools right now and stuff, especially in Nigeria, where, again, we've admitted has more occurrences of people with albinism. I think it would also be helpful to have teachers talk about it more openly and educate the kids.
Question.
I feel like,
Do you think the education should be talking about the kids or the adults?
I think the kids. Don't think.
I think both.
Maybe both. But I feel like adults, because they're still the adults are the ones who push the culture, I guess. I think kids kind of would. And I think, you know what, I agree with both, actually, because kids can correct their parents, like, if their parents are, like, messing up at home, or they'll just know to stand up, especially when you get to that teenage age, they'll know to stand up for people when they see bullying and stuff like that, for example.
I come from the mentality of, like, sometimes you can't teach an old dog new
tricks, right?
But, like, with kids, like, you can stop the bias before they
takes
get
root,
to it,
right?
Yeah, because like, as you said, like, Elena, in primary school there wasn't that much of it, and then you get to secondary school and all of a sudden, like, people are spewing, like, ignorance. And I just think it comes from a lack of education. Like, if they understood the language behind it and the understanding of it, I feel like it might just be, like, you know, just one of these things. They know, like, it's not that big of a deal. They've been taught the language. I still think kids will be mean. Kids
it's
will
true.
Be kids. Teenagers are horrible, but at least they
scary.
Would know. Yeah, at least they would know. And I think knowledge and education really play a huge role.
100%, definitely.
But yeah, I think that is it. I think we are at the end of this episode, but do you have any other nuggets to drop before we go?
I think just, you know, for everybody who has, like, taken the time to listen to this, again, massive, massive thank you. And just, you know, spread this everywhere, share it, and just make sure that we are, you know, continuing to educate everybody about albinism and just continuing this motion and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I guess that's the last thing that I would have to say.
Yeah, I think like, before we drop this episode, I'm going to try to look for groups that are supporting people with albinism, especially, like, places in Africa, because as we've discussed, there's so much stigma that actually threatens the lives of people living with it. So I think if you can, first of all, you guys do your research to, like, look more into it, educate yourselves, because, like, just knowing makes a difference. It changes how you approach somebody that has albinism, and then also you can donate to like those kind of groups that are making the difference, because it's a real threat. It might not be your experience, but people are living with this, right. And like it's a huge deal. But yeah, that is it for us. Elena, tell us where people can find you and like your socials so we can see how bad you are on Instagram.
As in body extraordinaire.
Please. You can find me on IG at Lainatopia. And then if you want to, you can find me on TikTok at Lainatopia18.
Okay. All right. And we'll link that in the description as well. So look out for that and you can check her out. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your experience with us.
Thank you.
Thank you really, so much. Really changed my thoughts on it. Yeah. All right, guys. We will catch you guys in 2 weeks. Have a great rest of the week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.